we can have the 3-to-1 margin and we can override any of the governor's vetoes that we want. We need to have someone who is going to be judiciously principled in the seat and on the court, the highest court in the state of Wisconsin, to help us kind of determine what some of these laws are going to be in the state of Wisconsin after they come through our courts and come down from the federal government as well.
You're listening to WAUK Jackson Milwaukee, WMDX Columbus Madison, WGBW Green Bay, WISS Oshkosh, WZBU New Holstein, WLCX La Crosse, and WBZH Hayward.
Investing in this race to try to influence it. And guess who's going to have business before this court regarding Tesla? If you guessed Elon Musk, you're right. So what do you think he might expect in exchange for his investment? Because we saw what he's getting in exchange for his investment in the presidential race, which is unfettered access to the federal government and the ability to dismantle it at his will.
Honey, are you suggesting that it's not coincidence that 48 hours after Tesla filed suit in state court that the pocketbook opened? Wow!
Did you guys rehearse this?
We didn't.
Beforehand?
No.
That was pretty good.
Right.
Representative Fong.
This is about standing up for our Wisconsin values. Freedom, fairness, democracy, our rights. And you can either have a judge who is going to destroy all those by answering to co-presidents, and we already know this based on the mailers that have been sent out and the ads that they are running, that you're going to have a judge who answers to Trump and Musk, or you're going to have a judge that answers to the people. And we want someone that shares the values that I know all Wisconsinites have, and that's of fairness, that's of freedom, that's of rights, and that's of democracy.
Right. So, next question, a little bit closer to home. The state's largest business lobby, Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, has been especially litigious over the years. Would that be a fair way to characterize that?
I would say so.
What would concern you about a return to a right-wing control of the court in their dealings with the state's largest business lobby?
Well, we're seeing this shift in the playing field, and we have for a very long time, where big gets bigger begets even bigger. Right? And it is tilting the playing field against working families. We are seeing this on full display, of course, with Musk now, the grossest embodiment of it at the federal level. Who is going to speak up for the small business owner? Who is going to speak up for the people working for small businesses? When we're talking about economic fairness, we're talking about an ability to get ahead, but before a court of law, we're talking about just access to justice. That if you are a worker who is wronged, if you are a worker who is sent to work in an unsafe environment and gets a devastating injury, you need to be able to get justice for that. And the more power we give to big businesses that are only getting bigger, the less power that we the people have, that workers have. We need a government, all three branches, that is more reflective of people who work for a living than people who are bosses for a living and talk on the phone all day and watch the market all day.
I'll jump in and say to anybody out there, if you voted for Donald Trump and you're pissed off or you feel that you've been duped, you should feel pissed off. You have been. Like my colleague said, that this is not what you voted for. Oftentimes, you have big businesses, and y'all laid it out perfectly. You have these big businesses. They have this principle called ROI, return on investment, and they put their money out. And this is why they supported a Donald Trump. This is why they have an Elon Musk in the White House right now, or ransacking any department that he can, because they want a return on their investment. They want to do well, and they don't want to pay for it. That's what a lot of wealthy people do. They want investments. They want things that they own that they didn't have to pay for. I just got into a conversation about building sports arenas last night with a cousin of mine. And you always have these large owners who want sports arenas, but they want the people to pay for it. You have these billionaires who want to get everything and have the people pay for it. That's what Donald Trump and Elon Musk are doing at the federal level. There's a $4.5 trillion tax cut that they're fleecing the government to pay for billionaires and millionaires. And we at the state of Wisconsin have the opportunity to like my colleague said, to push back against that and say the people in Wisconsin, we want to make decisions for ourselves. And we're able to do that not only for the Supreme Court, but at the education level in the state of Wisconsin.
So the Wisconsin Supreme Court has also ruled on a number of issues when it comes to environmental protection and conservation. And in the age of a changing climate, this has major economic implications as well. Melissa, we'll start with you, since you've talked a bit about this on the Climate Check segment on Up North News Radio. What are some of the ways this election could impact the environment in Wisconsin?
Great question. So, we know that that the Republicans have been very hostile to climate progress in Wisconsin. And I know our friends here in the legislature are no stranger to that. I know that Representative Maura Mukunde has a bill out right now and has had multiple bills on climate action that have gone nowhere. But what's really concerning about this election is the ability to, I think you made the point earlier, to stop any of the federal funds coming into this state from the IRA, to stop any of the action that is happening in this state. We know that we have thousands and thousands of jobs in solar, in wind, in energy storage that are being funded by these federal dollars. These are good paying jobs where people can have a career. Some of them even, you know, right out of high school, making $30 an hour, having a great career. That money is going right back into their community. And if this court decides, hey, we don't think that this money is being properly spent in this state, we don't agree, like, this is not going to be happening, that is a really big concern, not just for the economy, because that would be shutting down all of those jobs, but we know it would be a big issue for climate, right? Because the planet is getting hotter. We just had the hottest year on record in recorded history. We know that it is going to continue to get worse. If we don't do anything to curb emissions, it's going to continue to get hotter. We're going to continue to have more and more extreme weather events that cause flooding, that cause worse natural disasters. We're going to have more tornadoes. We're going to see more hurricanes in the south. And it's going to just get to be a whole lot worse everywhere. The impact could be really devastating.
Because Democrats are in the minority in the legislature, one of the most effective policy-making things in the state right now is the Wisconsin Public Service Commission, the PSC. The majority of these appointees right now are Evers appointees. You asked about WMC. Mm-hmm. I am here to tell you that dang near everything the PSC does, WMC will tell you, oh, it's bad for business, it's bad for our big folks. The PSC is a bulwark against that, and the Supreme Court, a Supreme Court that looks at the law and interprets it fairly, is another bulwark against some of these worst outcomes. And so to me, that's how you draw the line between this race and energy, is a Supreme Court that looks at the law, interprets it fairly, and, you know, and like, does that on PSC matters is really, really important. Sorry, Representative.
Oh, not at all. That was a very important point. I'm going to simplify it a little bit more. If we have a conservative-leaning court that answers to WMC, the economy is going to tank, because I think when people think about the economy, we aren't exactly like able to like distill that down into what it is, but the economy is only the economy if there are the people. And if the people aren't healthy, because WMC is defending and protecting big businesses who are polluters, then we're not going to have not a healthy economy, because we don't have healthy people who have opportunities to pursue their like right to liberty and happiness and their right to work where they want to and provide for their families. And so the consequences for climate are directly connected to the health of the people. And if we don't have healthy people, we don't have an economy.
So 2030 is right around the corner, and scientists everywhere have said that we cannot have runaway climate change. We got till 2030, and that's the mark. It's not some date that some politician somewhere set up, it's scientists. And my good colleague Chris Larson said that 10 years ago was the best time to do something about this. The second best time is now. And as Dr. King talked about being in the fierce urgency of now, when I was on the county board, we created the City-County Task Force on Climate and Economic Equity. And many of those jobs we lost in the city of Milwaukee due to deindustrialization, where the A.O. Smiths and the Tower Automotives and the Adelphi's left, though, that also created this gap and this hole in our city's economy as well. You had middle-class folks who were able to go from one job in the morning, quit and go to another job in the afternoon, who are not able to do that. We could replace whole industries by doing green-collar economies in places like in the city of Milwaukee, places like in Kaukauna, places like in Chippewa Falls. And this is that great opportunity to build that rural and urban bridge that we always talk about. Some people want to have a rural-urban divide. We're building a bridge and making sure that we can do the work and actually get things done. And the Climate Accountability Act, I was in a Republican's office earlier today where they were talking about nuclear energy and saying, oh, but it helps us get to our carbon reduction percentage goals. I said, oh, converging interests, let's have a conversation. And we're able to do that now. And one of the biggest things is that we always have our labor folks and our environmental folks. I think it's really important to sit down, have a conversation, tell everybody you love them, go through the different parts of the conversation that are tough. Then at the end of the conversation, remind everybody that you love them again, and then move forward and see what we can do to get to our 2030 goals, which will get us to our 2050 goal of net zero.
All right, one more question then before Kreitlow gives me the hook here. One of the ways I see this election connecting to our economy is on the issue of fair maps. Longtime recombobulation area readers are probably not all that surprised to hear me bring this up. But this to me is at the very foundation of how we make decisions on any issue in Wisconsin, including issues relating to the economy. The current court, one of the biggest decisions of the new liberal majority was to strike down the old, egregiously gerrymandered maps, ruling them unconstitutional. So how do you see this election impacting fair maps and the redistricting process here in Wisconsin? We'll start with our state representatives here.
If we have a conservative-leaning court, one of their priority items will be to go back to rig maps so that the legislature can have, like, be ruled by an artificial majority that was gained by having rigged maps. If we want to see economic prosperity for our state by bringing in hundreds of million dollars by decriminalizing cannabis, by ensuring working families have access to universal paid leave, childcare, caregiving, to make sure that we are able to fully fund our public schools, all of these policies that we know would transform and improve lives for working people cannot happen under rigged maps. And so that is one of the biggest things at stake. I would say one of maybe the biggest thing at stake right now is our ability to continue to prosper in this state under a democracy has everything to do with those rigged maps.
There are Republicans who have been heard saying, let's wait till April 1st and see what happens on that day. And they're not going to have new rigged maps. They're going to go back to the old rigged maps. We want our old maps back, the kind that had that where a person like a Tony Evers could win the state by 2 points, but they still get 2/3 of the seats in the assembly. Those are the kind of maps that they want. They want perpetuitous pressure and control over things. And there are so many things at stake. You don't get these brilliant minds that we have in our caucus now with those old rigged maps. You get the same old, do what I tell you to do. I'm not going to hold a hearing. I'm not even going to meet with you about this bill. I'm not going to have a conversation with you. I don't care what people in your community think about it. They don't matter. And then they tell you, well, oh, you're losing because people don't like your politics. Or your politics aren't good. You don't have the right issues. Not these crazy gerrymander maps that we have.
I agree with everything. And, you know, we know that without the ability also, you know, Wisconsin is different from some other states. We don't have the ability to go to a statewide referendum like some other states do on policies, right? So even though we have things like expanding Medicaid, which would allow us to save billions of dollars and cover tens of thousands more people, we can't do that in Wisconsin because we can't go to referendum. We can't pass things like you know, closing the boyfriend loophole and requiring background checks on firearms and taking them away from domestic abusers, because even though 80% of Wisconsinites, even people who own guns, support things like that, because we don't have a statewide referendum capability and Republicans in the legislature won't allow it. So we need fair maps to make sure that we can elect a legislature that is going to represent the will of the people. So it's incredibly important that we get the right right person who will be fair and impartial on the Supreme Court, so we've got the ability to preserve our fair maps and have a legislature that's going to represent the will of the people.
In 20 seconds or less, because I know we got to go. When we have a government that is of the people, by the people, and for the people, it is possible to have an economy that is for the people. Mm-hmm. If you have a government that is of the billionaires, by the billionaires, it will only ever be for billionaires like Elon Musk. That's the choice on April 1st.
Let's give a big hand for our panel, Joseph Pecky and Melissa Baldoff, State Representative Supreme Moro Mukunde, and State Representative Francesca Hahn. Thank you.
Thank you, Dan. And thanks to our panel. As they step down and we get set for our third panel, let me tell you just a moment. If folks hadn't heard the news, maybe they're catching this in their car after a day of work or anything like that. The Donald Trump's head of the Environmental Protection Agency today announced massive rollbacks of environmental regulations, and his quote was, "We are driving a dagger through the heart of the climate change religion and ushering in America's golden age." I think he misspelled gilded age on there. I mean, this is Bond villain level stuff, which is what we called the 6 a.m. hour of Up North News Radio this morning, where Melissa Baldoff and I talked about the promises that are being kept by the Trump administration to roll back and to say that they have a moral obligation to bring fossil fuels back to the world. Every election counts, and the Supreme Court one is no exception. The folks listening on Civic Media across the Civic Media Radio Network are going to pause for a quick break. We here are going to hear as well from one of our sponsoring groups, Indivisible, and then we'll get started with panel number three. We'll be right back.
The Todd Alba Show.
Here's what Trump actually said. Quote, "The only thing that makes sense is for Canada to become our cherished 51st state. This would make all tariffs and everything else totally disappear. To tell an ally, the only way to avoid crippling tariffs is for us to overtake you. That's tantamount to a declaration of war. That should be taken deadly seriously."
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
The possibility of lung cancer can be pretty scary, especially if you're one of approximately 8 million current or former smokers at high risk. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know that now there's a breakthrough low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early, and it only takes 60 seconds. You stop smoking, now start screening. For an easy quiz to see if you're eligible, visit SaveByTheScan.org. It could save your life. SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Before we get started with our third and final panel discussion, this one on the issue of reproductive health rights and the importance of this state Supreme Court election, we want to hear from one of our sponsor and participating partner organizations, along with Up North News and Civic Media, for putting on today's event, and that would be Indivisible.
Great. Thank you. Thank you. Glad to be here. My name is Jonathan Garber. I'm just a citizen here in Madison, Wisconsin. I am a co-founder and a member of the Madison East Indivisible chapter, and I just want to tell you about how this started for me. I was just really marginally involved with political work, except I did do a lot of campaigning for local progressive candidates in Madison. But I was sitting in my chair during the election results, and as the evening went on, actually it didn't take very long, I was sinking lower and lower in my chair, feeling that probably the same feeling you felt of a foreboding of what was about to come, as if people couldn't look to see what was going to be happening a few months later. We didn't know exactly, but we had a general idea. But I decided that instead of feeling the despair that I was feeling, I was going to get involved. So unlike, you know, the people here who have jobs as journalists and they are involved in policy organizations such as education and the environment, we have legislators here. I'm just a citizen, and I am part of Indivisible because we are an organization of citizens. So I just wanted to spend a few minutes talking about what Indivisible is and then encourage you to join an Indivisible chapter near you. Indivisible is a national grassroots network of thousands of groups and millions of activists across every state taking regular, iterative, and increasingly complex actions to resist the GOP agenda, elect local champions, and fight for progressive politics. Indivisible groups make calls, they show up at elected officials' offices, they speak with their neighbors, they organize rallies and organizations. In fact, we actually are hosting an empty chair event. We've invited Ron Johnson to show up at one of our events coming up soon. It's just probably going to be an empty chair, but we're going to videotape it. People are going to talk about what they want to tell Ron Johnson, and then we're going to send him a videotape. All right. So that's what we do. Though through that work, we built hundreds of mini-movements in support of national and local priorities informed by their practices. And now after training and repetition, because we were involved in Trump 1.0, we build lasting power on home turf, a massive collective political muscle ready to be exercised each and every day in every corner of the country. So we are a national organization, but each of our groups, like Madison East, is a local grassroots organization. We decide what we're going to focus on. Since the start of 2025, Indivisible Wisconsin has seen a huge uptick in resistance organizing. The network has had, actually we have about 30 local Indivisible groups since the election, just here in Wisconsin, including Green Bay, Eau Claire, Ashland, Superior, Appleton, River Falls, Sheboygan, Manitowoc, and several in southwest Wisconsin. We've been hugely involved in a recent spate of congressional town halls, forcing Republican representatives to their own cuts to Medicaid, Medicare, and Social Security. Local groups like Door County Invisible, Grassroots Germantown, work closely with Wisconsin Fair Maps Coalition to ensure every Wisconsin voter has the chance to elect representation that is accountable to them and not party donors. Grassroots Menominee Falls area has done a lot of great work fighting book bans in the falls, including works with Jackie Picot, I hope I pronounced that right, and generating a ton of media exposure. Our groups are involved in building a better Wisconsin, and if you'd like to get involved, come to the Madison East table after the panels, and you can just scan our QR code to get involved. But if you're not from Madison, or we do have three other organizations in Madison alone, but we have 30 around the state, and if you want to get involved, go to indivisible.org, find a group, and you put in your zip code, and you can find a group near you. Okay, thanks for the opportunity to speak. Appreciate it.
Thank you. All right, let's bring in our third panel, where we're going to talk about reproductive health rights here. And as they take their seats, I'll tell folks who were just tuning in late that you are listening to our Up North News first ever live presentation, live event, talking about the stakes of the state Supreme Court race. We spoke earlier about the stakes for education in Wisconsin and then the economy. And now we're going to be talking about reproductive health care rights with a wonderful panel of folks here. Joining us now, we have Michelle Velasquez from Planned Parenthood Advocates of Wisconsin. We're going to be talking to Heather Martell from Chippewa Falls. We'll talk to Dr. Eliza Bennett, an obstetrician gynecologist, and State Senator Kelda Royes. Welcome them all to our panel. Heather, can I start with you? We've spoken before, and it is a story that is heartbreaking, but also truly brings the issue home of the importance of allowing women and families and their physicians the freedom to make choices. So that they can have the families that they want when they want. That was certainly your goal when your life took turns that you didn't expect. How do you tell folks about your story and why you're so active about it?
Well, in 2021, after years of trying to conceive with no luck, including IUI and Clomid, you name it, we conceived naturally. And at our anatomical ultrasound, which usually takes place at 20 weeks, we had it done at 19 weeks, we found out that our son was incompatible with life. He was missing vital organs. The organs that he did have were underdeveloped, undeveloped. There was failure to thrive, fetal seizures. He wasn't going to survive outside of my body. We had a nursery all set up. We were ready for a baby. But we learned that pregnancy does not always mean baby. We went from planning the colors of our nursery to planning which urn we would be taking our son home in. We had to figure out, because at that point in 2021, Minnesota's abortion laws were 23 weeks. After 23 weeks, you couldn't have an abortion. In Wisconsin, it was 20 weeks. So in the matter of 3 weeks, we had to plan all of the steps for an abortion, plus wrap our heads around the fact that we were losing our child. When the Dobbs decision came down, I attended a rally at, I'm from Chippewa Falls. The town next to us is Eau Claire. That's where our federal courthouse is. When Dobbs fell, we had a rally at that courthouse. And I grabbed the mic and started telling our story. And I haven't stopped since. Thank you.
And that, Dr. Bennett, gets us into the notion of why you hear people talk about abortion care and not just abortion. And you talk about health care and reproductive rights. The Dobbs decision, I think, has helped a lot of people understand the much wider range than people thinking, abortion is just this matter of convenience. Can you talk a little bit more about how it is it's full health care, and then we'll get into the legal framework that surrounds it?
Right, so abortion affects all sorts of people. Many people like yourself that thought that they were gonna be able to have a baby. It affects pregnancies that people plan and intended and very much desired. And it affects the health of women and of pregnant patients everywhere. And the access to abortion and requiring abortion care is unpredictable. People don't know when they're going to need it. They don't know what's going to happen in their pregnancies. Physicians don't know. We can't predict it. And, you know, we lived through a year and a half of the 1849 law restricting our ability to care for patients, and it was tragic because I had to look to people and say, I can't take care of you. I need to send you to Illinois. I need to send you to Minnesota. I've been taking care of them for their whole pregnancy, and then they get a tragic diagnosis, and I have to shunt them off to a different state. Not to mention patients that you could take care of who had potentially lethal complications of pregnancy, you still were living in fear that you were going to get charged with some kind of felony, that your license was at risk, that your practice was at risk, that your ability to care for patients in the future would be at risk.
So when it comes to this Wisconsin Supreme Court election, what would you like to see in terms of a justice and a court and the degree to which they are in your exam room.
We need a justice that understands that reproductive health care should be decided by a patient and their physician. We need... And we need a justice that has a record that shows that they support those decisions and that kind of legislation, and not a justice that has time and time again defended laws that encroach upon the rights of patients to make their own decisions.
Michelle Velasquez, talk to us then about the legal framework. There are going to be laws about healthcare, about all kinds of other issues. What is the right way for a Supreme Court, and then we'll talk about a legislature, to have a legal framework that is essentially a shield for women and their doctors rather than a cage? What do we need to see from a Supreme Court?
Thanks, that's a good question. So when Dobbs was decided, essentially what it did is, you know, throw it back to the states is sort of what we hear a lot. So when we lost a federal constitutional protection, that now requires our state Supreme Court to interpret our own state's constitution. And what do these words mean? What do the words, all people are born equally free and independent and have certain inherent rights, among those of which are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness? So we need a Supreme Court justice who recognizes that people have bodily autonomy, that they have agency, and that they have a right to decide their own lives and their own futures because they know what is best for their families.
Mm-hmm. Senator Calderoys, this is something that you have been active and vocal about for a long time now. And so obviously this Wisconsin Supreme Court race means a lot to you. So let's just come back to the root question. How important is this race deciding control of the court for women and families in Wisconsin?
This is the most important election that we face in terms of reproductive freedom and women's equality. Mm-hmm. And the reason is we have in Wisconsin an 1849 ban on the books. It is one of the most strict and severe bans in the country. In fact, when you look at Georgia's abortion ban, Texas's abortion ban, they're actually not as strict as the one Wisconsin has. And Brad Schimmel has said time and time again that he's fine with the 1849 law. He would eagerly put that back into place like that if he were put on the Supreme Court. He would find a way to put that in place. On the other hand, you have Susan Crawford, someone who has spent her career as a prosecutor standing up for women, helping people who are victimized. You know, she works as an attorney representing Planned Parenthood. She is someone who is a woman, cares deeply about women's lives and health. And I trust that she would do, you know, her job as a justice to be fair about it, and that she would understand and see that the 1849 ban is not acceptable and we cannot go back to this 19th century law.
I want to come back to a theme that has been mentioned in the other panels, but I think is important and perhaps overlooked. And that is the whole notion that a newly comprised conservative-controlled court would strike down the fair maps and put a legislature back into place. Well, it's already a Republican majority, but a supermajority, and what it would mean for women's health care rights. Because we're talking more than abortion here. We're talking things like IVF, and I would imagine you've seen bills or proposals for other ways that a legislature, thanks to a new Supreme Court, would show up in that exam room, if not the bedroom.
Absolutely. I mean, here's one thing we can say with certainty about Republicans and right-wing politicians. They will do anything to get and keep power. That is what they care about, and that is what they are best at. You know, everything else, improving your life, they're not good at that. But they are absolutely good at rigging the system to benefit themselves and to implement their far right-wing unpopular schemes. In Wisconsin, if the Supreme Court flips back to conservative, we will be re-gerrymandered in a matter of months. We will see the 1849 ban reinstated. We will see further retrenchment on all kinds of issues, right? Not just abortion, but access to birth control. You know, we had a bill in the last session to say, okay, abortion is always under legal threat, but let's make sure that we have established a right to contraception in our statute so that no matter who you are, you can do it. Every single Senate Republican voted against it. Every one. So that's the extremists that we are dealing with, and those are the people that are going to be empowered to make decisions and have permanent control of the legislature unless we elect Susan Crawford to the Supreme Court.
Michelle, during a time when the 1849 statute was under debate and Planned Parenthood ceased abortion care services, there are so many other services that Planned Parenthood provides. What was the impact on basic health care that was provided in Wisconsin during that time?
Sure. Well, abortion is basic health care. That is health care that people need for all sorts of reasons, and all of those reasons are valid. And, you know, so the impact was that people who relied on being able to go to places like Planned Parenthood for that care had to go out of state. It meant that OBGYNs and other healthcare professionals like Dr. Bennett were terrified about whether or not they had crossed the line into something that a prosecutor could say, or at least argue, was criminal under that ban. It also meant that people had confusion around what they could access and what they couldn't. So, for example, emergency contraception is not an abortifacient, but we had a lot of people asking questions about whether they could still access emergency contraception. So this really just all goes back to we need justices who interpret our state constitution as giving all of us, because we all deserve this, the agency and autonomy to make reproductive health care choices for ourselves, and that includes birth control, and that includes abortion. And it goes beyond that. Things like IVF, transgender care, LGBTQ rights, all of these things really relate back to that personal bodily autonomy and agency.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Bennett, there's a new gubernatorial election in 2026. There's a way that these maps could be construed to give a supermajority once again to conservatives. So there could very well be a situation down the road here where, without a governor to veto it, we'd be looking, if not at some kind of a total abortion ban, we get into the numbers game, which we see a checkerboard all over this country. Here's an abortion ban at 14 weeks. Here's one at 13 weeks. Here's one at 8 weeks. Here's one at 16 weeks. As somebody who is a doctor, right? Medical professional, scientist, I believe. Can you answer for us the healthcare basis of why there's all these different numbers? Is there one number that's right? Are any of these rooted in science whatsoever?
No.
Thank you.
No.
Okay. The witness is excused. No. But how does that feel as a doctor, knowing that Supreme Courts, not just the U.S., but all these states, are all going to be asked to weigh, well, this ban for this many weeks and this one for that many weeks, as somebody who actually looks at the science of pregnancy?
It's infuriating and frustrating and just makes our job and the health and lives of patients very difficult. Not to mention, when we look at these states that have passed these bans, it is having a negative impact on people choosing to be OBGYNs, on people choosing to do residencies in these states. I train residents here. If we go back to a situation where we're no longer able to teach the full depth and breadth of obstetrics and gynecology, then we will lose out on residents. And those residents are who becomes doctors in our state. So the entire state of Wisconsin loses out on high-quality physicians because we didn't recruit those people, because we passed laws that made them choose to never come here.
And I'm going to affirm that as somebody whose wife is an OBGYN and practices in a rural area, that, you know, the rural healthcare crisis is real right now, much less exacerbated by the factors that you've laid out. Heather, I started with you and come back to you near the end, because I know you wanted to make this a bit more interactive with the folks here and ask a few questions and help kind of bring this issue home to others.
Yeah, so is it okay if I stand up?
Absolutely.
Okay, great. I like to walk. I was in a car for 3 hours, so. My name's Heather Martell. You heard my story. You've heard from the other panelists. There's a number of you here. I ask that if you feel safe and comfortable to do so, that you raise your hand. Please raise your hand if you've ever been pregnant.
I'm going to use a radio prerogative to say that since it's radio, could we also applaud? Maybe raise your hand quickly. Thank you.
Or applaud, okay. And again, if you're comfortable and safe to do so. Applaud if you've ever had a miscarriage. A stillbirth. Thank you for your bravery. Have been induced early. Had an ectopic pregnancy. Had complications from twins or multiples, such as twin-to-twin transfusion syndrome. Had a placental or cervical problem, like cervical insufficiency, placenta previa, or placental abruption. A pregnancy-related condition like preeclampsia or gestational diabetes. Diagnosis of a fetal anomaly or incompatible with life. It's a sad club to be in. Postpartum infection, also known as childbed fever, septic uterus, septic shock. Had an abortion for any reason. Thank you for your bravery. I don't expect anyone to clap or make themselves known for this one, but survived rape or incest. Everyone that clapped, that raised their hand, everyone that clapped tonight would have run the risk of not being able to access treatment with Brad Schimmel in charge. Mm-hmm. We would have run the risk of dying if a man like Brad Schimmel is in charge. You may not like the candidates. You don't have to like the candidates. You don't have to love the candidates. But you have to realize that somebody you love will die, could die, if a man like Brad Schimmel is in charge. He is a danger to women. All of these things that I asked, all conditions that doctors like her, help us with, when her hands are tied, we run the risk of dying. That's not fair to us. We deserve better. We deserve somebody much better than Brad Schimmel, who has continually showed us who he is. He is a man who does not trust women, who does not trust families, and will put his beliefs before our health and safety. Thank you.
I've got just under 2 minutes left, and while that it would be nice to and so proper to end on a note like that, but to the rest of our panel, if any of you have any reaction to what she said or any parting words, I'd love to hear them. Doctor, let's start with you.
I would just like to echo your words. I mean, it is so important that patients and physicians are allowed to make healthcare decisions and that it's not under the purview of the legislature or your elected official. And supporting Susan Crawford for Supreme Court is gonna get us that type of autonomy that we so desperately need to preserve.
Michelle Velasquez.
Thanks. Yeah, I mean, the Supreme Court justice who wins this election will be deciding cases that have real impact and real life implications for everybody in this room, for all of the people in our family, our friends, our community, everybody that we love and care about will be impacted, whether it's reproductive health, whether it's education, whether it's economic justice, all of these things impact our lives. And so I hope you will consider a candidate who will interpret our state constitution and our laws that actually progress bodily autonomy, that progress
safety and well-being.
Senator Royce.
You know, on April 1st, the Supreme Court election is obviously critically important because it is really about our freedom to have a democracy and our freedom to live our lives and make our own choices. But, you know, the freedom of our kids to learn is also on the ballot. And that's why I want to make sure that people are learning about our state superintendent, Jill Underley, who has been a champion for public education and public schools, and the freedoms that our kids deserve. Our kids deserve the right to a constitutional education, and Brittany Kinzer would deny them that because she supports privatization of our public education system. She is a lobbyist for the voucher interests, and we can't allow that to happen. There's also a constitutional amendment on the ballot. Now, Michelle and I are lawyers. I think we should be pretty careful about amending the state constitution. This was put on specifically to make it harder for people to vote and harder for people to challenge if their rights are violated. Wisconsin has one of the strictest voter ID laws in the country already on the books, but they want to enshrine it in the Constitution so that if your rights are violated and you're denied your right to vote, you can't even go to court and challenge it. So make sure you vote no on that constitutional amendment.
Well, I was going to wrap things up telling you that there are other reasons to vote on April 1st, but my new radio co-host, Kelda Royce, over here is taking some of my job. So it made my life a lot easier. I'm just going to be tossing things back to the studio over at Civic Media because Todd Alba has headed across the street along with Mr. Schaefer from the recombobulation area. So my thanks to them. My thanks to our sponsors and partners. My thanks to our parent organization, Courier Newsroom, parent of Up North News. You can find what we do at upnorthnewswi.com. Look for us on social media. My great thanks to our Courier Newsroom team that helped us put this together, to our panelists, and to all of you who attended or are listening or watching by live stream today. Remember to vote on April 1st, and we'll continue to follow it on Up North News and through the Civic Media Radio Network. Thank you again, and good night.
And welcome back to the world headquarters here, our studios, as it turns out, right across the street from the Overture Center in beautiful downtown Madison, what has turned out to be a beautiful spring evening. We thank Pat Kreitlow and everybody over there at the Overture Center, including our very own Chris Casper, who is engineering on site, and Aaron Zommers, who is engineering here in the studio. We could not have done it without them, so appreciate that. Welcoming my colleague here at Civic Media, our political editor and the founder of the Recombobulation Area, Mr. Dan Schaefer, who, Mr. Schaefer, did a fine job moderating your panel tonight. Quite an evening.
Thank you, sir. You did a great job yourself.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, quite an evening. Lots to talk about when it comes to this this race, this spring election, the race for Wisconsin Supreme Court. Now the most expensive race for a state court seat in the history of the country. It's pretty wild.
That's crazy. I mean, we're over 50-some million dollars, right, according to the last tabulations. And you can't even really keep up with it almost hour to hour.
That's right. Yeah, WisPolitics reported today that they have eclipsed the 2023 spending, which at the time was a record. We knew this was going to into record spending. Elon Musk pouring more and more dollars into this. We had a chance to talk about that a little bit on my panel on the economy. There's just so many issues that this election connects to. And I think, you know, the event tonight with, you know, focusing on education, the economy and reproductive rights, you know, really highlights some of the top issues. But there's really just that's only really scratches the surface of what you can really get to with it.
We could have done another hour easily. And still probably not gotten everything. Let's just do a little review here, because coming up after the top of the hour, we're going to be joining Pete Schwabe and his great program Nightlight here on the Civic Media Radio Network. But let's review this evening tonight, sponsored by Up North News Radio, on the Supreme Court candidates and the race, and of course the election coming up on April 1st. We started out the evening with this future of public education in Wisconsin. Dan, anything that stuck out? I mean, there's a lot of great conversation, but anything in particular that you thought stuck out tonight?
Yeah, I thought freshman state representative Christian Phelps made a lot of great points on that panel, just about how where the legislature is focusing and how that connects to the way that the Republican majority has operated. And I think, you know, and I talked about this a little bit on my panel. I've talked about this a ton over the years, but I think the fair maps issue connects to, you know, is kind of the one thing that connects to all of it, right? Mm-hmm. It connects to our ability to make decisions on education, on the economy, and on down the line. And I thought, you know, some of the questions that you asked some of the panelists, some of the key issues raised just about the nature of, you know, almost the constitutionality of public education as this foundational principle in Wisconsin.
Yeah, I think a lot of the credit goes to our colleague, Pat Kreitlow, who put all these folks together on these panels. And I was just struck by Julie Mead from the UW School of Madison of Education, being an attorney and a law person. And again, whether it's immigration, again, we look at everything happening in Washington. Well, how does that affect us in Wisconsin? And here there are districts in Wisconsin. You have kids who came here through no fault, if you want to use the word fault, although that's maybe not the right word, through no choice of their own. And yet they find themselves in perhaps immigration standing, and school districts are having to deal with this. And again, this could be an issue depending upon who wins this race on April 1st, that folks will make a huge difference in people's lives.
Right. This is where the rubber meets the road, right? You know, we talk about these decisions being made in Washington, D.C. with Donald Trump, with Elon Musk, with all of these characters. But, you know, this is where the rubber meets the road, and you're seeing how people in the education space are, you know, responding to what's happening and getting engaged on the key issues right now.
Yeah. One more point before we leave the education part. I think another thing is our educators. It was great to have a teacher on the panel. Yes, Representative Phelps touched on this as well, but just the fact that we need more young people going into teaching, and having Act 10 still in place and other things is a discouraging factor that will make a huge difference in small towns all across Wisconsin where there's nobody there to teach art or algebra.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And with all of the referenda that are happening for schools all across the state, you see the impact of those decisions in Madison and how they ripple out throughout the state. And so, yes, I think, you know, so many of the people on the panel made such great points about the issue.
The economy was next. Of course, that was your panel. Fine job keeping everybody on track there. One of the things that really stood out, I mean, I just take Joe Zepecki and put it metaphorically into my veins, because, I mean, the guy is just, he's a wealth of knowledge, and he explains it where any goofball, even like me, can understand it. I thought him just taking on the political aspect of this head on was fantastic.
Yeah, I think so. You know, we'll probably get some sound bites from that one in particular. You know, he came ready to go. He came ready to talk about Elon Musk. He came ready to talk about, you know, what the impact of somebody who is going to potentially have business in front of the Wisconsin Supreme Court, what it might mean for him to effectively buy a seat on the Supreme Court and what that might mean. So I think, you know, he really articulated, I think, one of the points that has really stood out to me throughout this campaign. You know, there was a really great piece online today, Ari Berman, who's been on our airwaves before from Mother Jones, saying that this election is a referendum on Elon Musk. And I think that's kind of what Mr. Zepecki was getting at in his comments too, because we have this unique ability in Wisconsin right now to send a message to Elon Musk, to the Trump administration, saying we don't like what's going on right now, and we don't want the richest man in the world, who is on the verge of being the most powerful man in the world, to be able to just buy any seat across the country in special elections, state court races. Like, this could set a real precedent for what's ahead. And I think Wisconsin voters have just this tremendous opportunity to be this bulwark in this election at this critical moment.
Talking with our colleague Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation Area and Civic Media's political editor here as we wrap up our coverage of a special evening with Up North News Radio, Pat Kreitlow, and talking about the race for the Wisconsin Supreme Court coming up on April 1st. Dan, I was also struck in that segment that you moderated on the economy by Representative Francesca Hong. As someone who has been a small business owner, as a renowned restaurateur here in Madison, she knows what it's like to make a payroll, and making the point that this is about standing up for small independent businesses. And that doesn't matter whether that's downtown Madison or in Hayward or in Green Bay.
Yeah, this is a small business state, and it has been shifting toward big business over the years. And I think if you want to, you know, keep the character of Wisconsin to be a small business state, have a state government that supports Main Street over, you know, some of the larger corporations. I think you have to look at this, the impact of this. You know, we talked a little bit about Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce. They have been very litigious as the state's largest business lobby over the years. And, you know, they have strong connections to Republicans across the state. And, you know, what would it mean for the court to go back to a right wing majority? And I thought she made some great points on that, too.
Yeah. Anything else before we move on about the economy portion of the show or the evening tonight? That was kind of a show. It was a live show.
Yeah, that's
right. It was nice to have a studio audience tonight. I'll say that.
Well, we had so many, engaged people in the audience too. I started my part of the panel asking people if they had a plan to vote, if they're ready to vote, if they're telling other people to vote, and we had applause all around. So, love how engaged. Civically engaged, the fine folks in the city of Madison are.
That's really fantastic. I thought the last panel was just, it was an extraordinarily personal panel.
Yeah.
Pat Kreitlow did a masterful job of moderating that. But some of the stories, when you talk about women's reproductive rights, women's health care, it doesn't get more personal than that.
Yeah, that's right. The portion with the speaker talking about like how personal these choices are and how central the court is to these choices, to giving women and their rights to make these decisions. It's really, really powerful.
And it's one of those things, as we all have things in life, but unless you've been there, unless somebody in your family's been there, none of the rest of us can understand. And the incredible thing, I think it takes time. We need to take a moment to remember tragedies in our life don't look at political affiliation. And so these things, these healthcare needs for women affect all of us, regardless of who we vote for.
Absolutely. And I think, talking about these stories of what was happening in Wisconsin when the 1849 criminal abortion ban was in place, like it's, we don't want to always talk about like, oh, we don't want to go back to this. Don't want to go back to that. You want to put forth a vision for the future. But at the same time, I think it is really important to remember what women were going through when that ban was in place.
Yeah. About 1.5 minutes here, Dan Schaefer. Any final thoughts as we wrap up our coverage tonight?
Well, we've got a debate ahead of us right now. We're going to go back over to the Overture Center and watch this at a debate watch party with the fine folks in Madison here. I'm excited to see how people react to this.
Yeah, me too. And I know we've had some questions and comments. Not carrying the debate live on the Civic Media Network as we have in the past was not our choice. It's just these things get sold or whatever, and the rights go to WISN in Madison, and they chose not to extend that to other places. So, that's their right, and you can find the debate on other affiliate TV stations across the country, and certainly Civic Media News will have coverage tomorrow across the network.
That's right. We'll have plenty of time to talk about what happened in the debate across the Civic Media Network on all of our shows tomorrow.
And we'll just we'll chill and we'll recombobulate.
That's right. That's right. We all need to recombobulate in these discombobulating times.
No better person to do it with than you, Dan Schaefer, our political editor and founder of the Recombobulation Area. Thanks for a great evening, my friend.
Thanks to you as well.
It's always great working with Dan. And, of course, to our colleague, Pat Kreitlow, the founder of Civic Media. time for Todd to go and have a drink. The founder of North News Radio on the Civic Media Radio Network. And, of course, the Courier News Service as well. We thank Pat Kreitlow and all the folks at Up North News Radio. We thank Aaron Zommers and Chris Casper, our great engineers tonight. Luke Mathers as well, Jamie Martinson, and, of course, our owner, Sage Weil, for allowing us to broadcast this tonight. On behalf of all of us here at Civic Media, we bring you a good evening. Stay tuned now for Pete Schwabba and Nightlight. You've been listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
Welcome to Madison's Real News and Great Conversation, 92.7 WMDX.
Rational Revolution with Mark Becker.
How are the Trump policies going to affect agriculture? We'll find out with Zachiel Torres-Small, who was the Deputy Secretary of Agriculture in the Biden administration.
Saturdays at 2, Sundays at 1 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. The Todd Alba Show.
Many of the supporters of Trump voted on good faith and said, look, he says some crazy things, but you know what? He at least is telling me he's going to help my family and bring down the price on my heating bill. And that ain't what they're getting. What they're getting back is a political middle finger. And we're staring a recession straight in the face. And Donald Trump does not care. Because at the end of the day, this was one big grift.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app. This is 92.7 WMDX Columbus, Madison's home for real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
ABC News, I'm Dave Patrick. The 25% tariffs on imported steel and aluminum ordered by President Trump went into effect today. Next, the European Union said it would respond with retaliatory tariffs, and President Trump saying he'll respond in kind. Senate Democrats say their counterparts in the House had no part in crafting a GOP-approved deal to fund the government beyond Friday night, and Minority Leader Chuck Schumer says Senate Democrats won't provide the votes needed to pass it. Instead, Democrats are pushing for a 30-day clean stopgap bill. This evening, SpaceX scrubbing the launch of a new mission to return two astronauts from the International Space Station.
Dragon, SpaceX, LD on countdown one. At this time, we are standing down from today to further address hydraulic release data.
That's Mission Control. The astronauts arrived on Boeing Starliner for what was supposed to be an eight-day trip. Because of technical problems with the Starliner, they're still there nearly 10 months later. SpaceX says they're going to try again on Thursday. This is ABC News.
I'm Dan Schaefer.